Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host this afternoon. Today's program is a little off the beaten track. Last year, I read a fabulous book by Jerome Peterson. It was titled Thumb Flagging. It was set in the 1970s, and in part, it explores the life on the open road, hitchhiking around the U.S. Thumb flagging is very much a lost art these days, deemed too dangerous an activity by many people. But in the 70s, thumb flagging was my main mode of transport. I traveled many hundreds of miles. So I thought it would be fun to assemble a panel of ex-thumb flaggers to talk about the good old days. To help me in this quest is a very unlikely thumb flagger, my wife Jan Barrett. Jan, you had no problems hitching a ride to the studio today?
No, got a ride right away.
You know, clearly she has the technique down pat. From California, we have author Jerome Peterson, and it was Jerome's book, Thumb Flagging, that got me off on this tangent. Jerome, it's great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's great to talk to you too, Simon, and to be part of your show.
And also joining us is a veteran thumb flagger, Dan Sullivan. Dan, I don't believe we've ever spoken before, but my good friend Peter Hyatt speaks very highly of your knowledge of the road. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Simon. Peter promised me one thing. Much like hitchhiking, it's not about getting from one point to the other. I'm signing on for an adventure on this call, and we'll see where it goes for the show.
Jerome, let's start with you. Seeing as you're the miscreant that gave me the idea for the program through your book, were you an avid thumb flagger in your youth?
Yeah, I did quite a bit. It only lasted for a couple of years, but I did quite a bit, mostly in the Southwest.
Did you go long distances or
short? Yeah, I did. A couple of times. I went from Arizona to Illinois, and that was about the extent of the distance, but of course, when you're hitchhiking, the distance is so much different than when you're driving, you know, because it's a different mode of transportation.
Jan, of the esteemed crowd that we have assembled here, you're by far the most unlikely thumb flagger I can think of. In fact, I was absolutely astonished when you admitted that you'd indulged in this mode of transport. Tell us your story.
I was young and wild and free. I was just able to do whatever I wanted to back then. I was only 18, and we had some friends in Dallas, and I lived in Slidell, Louisiana, just across the lake in New Orleans. And we just decided, a friend of mine, she talked me into it. She said, let's hitchhike up there and see them. And at first I said, nah. But then I said, why not? We ain't got nothing to lose. So we did. We went by way from New Orleans to Houston and then up to Dallas from there. So it was a pretty adventurous trip that we had. Learned a lot of people. Got picked up by a lot of truck drivers. The one thing that we really had that was pretty, almost got us into trouble, though, was we did stop in Houston and got us a room, but we didn't have very much money left. So we got all the what we gathered up, what we had, and we paid for a room. We was going to try to get us a good night's sleep, get a shower and all that, and then get something to eat. But the air conditioner didn't work in the room, and it was really hot back then. I don't remember what month it was in, but I remember it was in the summer. And so we asked for another room, and they kept telling us they were going to get us one, they were going to get us one until the night was over, and they never did get us one. So we did go into the office before when we was checking out, and we were complaining because they had told us if they couldn't get us another one, they'd give us our money back, and they was refusing to give it. So they called the police on us, and they asked us to leave, politely asked us just to go on our way. So, of course, I guess back then it wasn't a big deal to see somebody hitchhiking because everybody did it. But, yeah, we did meet some interesting people, and we made it to Dallas in one piece with no harm done to us, but it was a lot of different trucks and cars, and, you know, we couldn't put a time limit on our trip because you didn't know how long you was going to have to wait for a ride or, you know, what was going to happen during the rides, and, well, that's about it.
Oh, come on, Jan. I mean, you know, two young ladies wearing, you know, obviously mini skirts.
No, we didn't wear mini skirts. We had our bell bottom pants and beads in our hair. I mean, you know, it's back what, 73?
Yeah.
We were like hippies too back then, you know. But yeah, we did have some strange events, I guess, with truck drivers. You know, they tell you put out or get out, and the next truck stop, naturally, we had to get out. So, nothing major like that, though, but it was fun. I had one guy offer to put us up in a hotel, a condo, not a hotel, and I said he'd give us whatever we wanted if we'd just stay there with him, and we weren't interested in that kind of stuff, so we just wanted to get to Dallas. And by the time we got there, we were so exhausted, and then we found out our friends that we went to see wasn't even there anymore. So we got lucky and got some more people that they knew that was there, and we had money wired from home, and they brought us home. We paid for the gas, and they just drove us home after that. It was an adventure. No, I mean, we rode around town. I mean, where I lived, we didn't have a car, so we walked, and, you know, people would pick us up, but it was no big deal when you get in the car. There was one time, though, we did pick up somebody picked us up, and me and my ex-sister-in-law, and before they got married. But anyway, we was in the back seat of the car, and the guy driving, come to find out, was a murderer, that he had killed his wife and her boyfriend whenever they caught him in bed. But that kind of freaked us out. But, you never know who's going to pick you up. But nowadays, it's not so safe.
Yeah. Dan, as I understand it, one of your trips was from New York to Florida. Did you do many long-haul journeys?
You know, I was a college student at that time. I'd say I started hitchhiking probably around 12 or 13 and had gotten pretty comfortable with the idea. So at that point, I was pretty confident. And as a college kid, I figured I looked the part if somebody would be harmless enough and probably didn't have enough money to get myself on my trip. So I put a sign, Spring Breaker, and said Florida, and had, you know, made it very graphic and made the sign pretty attractive and had a lot of antics where I'd get down on my knees and pray as the car would come by and wave and smile. I thought it was all about the theatrics to be able to ensure you got picked up. And I had some people go an hour out of their way just to make sure that I was going to be in a good spot for my next pickup. It was a great experience, and it was from upstate New York down to Marathon, Florida, in the Keys. And my uncle, who was in his mid-60s at the time, he flew down. He was ex-Navy, retired, flew to Gitmo in Cuba to Miami on a Navy hot plane, and then he hitchhiked from Miami to the Keys. I got there a day early, so I just knew the combination to his boat. We were going to be taking his sailboat, sailing it back up the East Coast to his home in Virginia. So I was there a full day ahead of him, and next day he pulls up in the back of a pickup truck waves me on to get in the truck because he had promised the driver if he drove him all the way to Marathon, Florida, he would take him to Porky's, the site from the movie. So the three of us went and had barbecue and beer at Porky's just to, you know, reward this driver who drove him all the way to Marathon. Great.
Simon, I have a question for Dan.
Sure.
Say, Dan, when you traveled on the East Coast, did you have any problems through some of the states that hitchhiking was illegal?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I remember one time late at night, a buddy of mine and I got on the interstate and had been drinking, and he didn't look too hard to find a place to have to go to the bathroom. And just as he was doing that, a state trooper pulled up. Of course, the worst of circumstances, my thumb is out. I'm thumb flagging while he's, you know, doing his, he's communing with nature. And the guy, we talked him out of it. He was going to lock us up right in there. And then he basically told us a route to go through the woods to get on a rural route. And as long as we hitchhiked off of his domain, which was the interstate, he wasn't going to lock us up. But that was a narrow escape.
What
well, we
state was that?
The interstate either.
That was, I think, Virginia.
West
and
Virginia.
We also in Virginia, we also had another instance. I had a guy drop me off in a park. And it ended up being an enactment, a Confederate Army reenactment. And there he dropped off an innocent Yankee. I'm from New York. He drops a Yankee off in the middle of a Confederate Army camp. Full uniform. They've got rifles. They've got they're just coming out of the tents in the morning. And they, you know, very nice. They made a bunch of good old boys lean over. And they're asking me where I'm from and where I'm looking to go. And I knew the minute I opened my mouth and spoke with my Yankee accent that I was going to be target practice. So, I had to hustle out of there. I thought that was a real narrow. That was worse than the interaction with the state trooper because I felt like these guys were looking for an excuse to shoot a Yankee, and I walked into their camp.
Jerome, have you had any experiences like that?
Well, not to the extent of the Confederate reenactment, but. As far as illegal states, I ran into Kansas, and in one part of Kansas, there's like a tollway, and you couldn't get on it. It was illegal to walk or ride a bicycle or hitchhike. So at that time, I was basically stuck right there and hoping that somebody would pick me up and take me through this area. And fortunately, somebody did. And it was one of the few rides that I got by a woman. When I hitchhiked, rarely did women pick me up or the guys that I knew hitchhiked. It was pretty rare for a woman to pick up a man, especially if there was like two of you. But this woman, she picked me up and took me through the area, and on my way I went.
I don't believe any woman ever picked us up. I think it was all men.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
really?
You were wearing your miniskirt.
I was not.
Did you hitchhike, Jen, in spike-heeled shoes?
No, I had sandals on, as a matter of fact. It was had to have something comfortable because we did do a little walking when we got put out on that truck stop, so you had to just go with whatever comfort you could.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Jen. Did you have any problems in between rides, you know, like were you stranded anywhere for any great length of time?
Well, no, not really, because the truck, they mostly dropped us off at the truck stops, and there was always a truck driver that was willing to give you a ride. Once in a while, maybe we would have like an hour or so or something like that, but other than in Houston, which we wound up staying all night, we didn't have any problems at all. It was like pick us up, drop us off, and then not long after that, we found somebody else. There was hardly any layover time, so to speak, between the rides.
You see, this is a clear example of sexism.
Well, but not only that, but, I mean, sometimes they would go a little bit out of the way or something, you know, instead of taking the long way. I mean, they would be taking the long way, but we did get kind of mixed up on our route, but we never planned a route to begin with. This was just something that we just decided to do, and it was nothing planned, big time at least. We should have planned better, but it turned out okay.
Now, did you have gear with you?
We had backpacks. The stuff that we, because we didn't want to carry too much. You know, we had to have an ID and all that, but we just put everything in a backpack, a few extra clothes, and that was it.
I was going to say, what Jan is saying there, I think, is hitting on the essence of it. It was never really planned. I think that was the beauty of it. It was it was an adventure. Yeah, you know, even if you had a way to get somewhere, this was more than a means of transportation. This was a freedom ride. This was an adventure. It was something where both the driver and the hitchhiker were kind of accepting in this pack to exchange an adventure. You're going to pick someone up, not just to help them out, but also that it's going to add something to your experience. And as a hitchhiker, you want to be able to have something additionally that's more fulfilling than just getting from point A to point B. And hitchhiking certainly would always create some story. So by the time you got to your destination, you were armed with bear with stories, because the experience of getting there was as good as getting to the end point.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, about 18 months ago, we needed to travel. Jan had this silly idea that we would just buy airline tickets. I mean, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. I mean, what do you get to see out of the window of an airplane? Nothing. Yeah, so we didn't hitchhike, but I persuaded her, and it took a great deal of persuasion, that what we needed to do was take the Greyhound bus. We did three Canadian provinces and I believe five U.S. states in something like 4 days. But by the end of the journey, you know, Jan had that, you know, deer in the headlight look.
Next time I'm flying.
It sure was fun.
Oh, yeah. Taking the bus, you meet all kinds of people.
Oh, yeah.
I remember taking the bus once from New York Port Authority, Times Square, when I was 15, which was not a place for a 15-year-old to be by any stretch. And I took it down to Virginia to meet up with my cousins and my uncle, who, again, was a sailing. And I took the bus all the way down to Virginia. And at that point, they were supposed to meet me. I got off the bus stop in the middle of nowhere in a small little rural town off the Chesapeake. And my cousins were still a day away from sailing. They weren't on time. You know, sailing is like hitchhiking. You never know when you're going to get someplace.
Right.
So I the appointed meeting spot was this family-owned restaurant. And they said, "Where is your family, son?" And I said, "They're not here yet. They're supposed to be here, but they're not here yet." And they, one of the great adventures, this family lived above the restaurant, and they invited me upstairs and fixed up a bed on the family couch in the living room and gave me breakfast. And the next morning, there was a knock on the door. It was my uncle. Figured out where I would be up in the family restaurant, and there I was having breakfast with the family. You know, just those type of adventures are just part of what's on the road.
Oh, I think amazing things happen on the road. Yeah, and not too many of them are bad. Yeah, you just, you know, find yourself in these situations where you go, "Wow, how did that happen?"
Yeah, it's usually, I mean, there's a hassle involved, but it's always offset by the magical experience that you have.
Okay, let's talk technique here. I mean, you know, thumb flagging, alas, has lost some of its luster over the years, but I had this theory when I was thumb flagging that you always needed to have a smile on your face and you need to face your potential ride. You know, even if you're walking, you'd hear the car behind you, do a 180, stick your thumb out, smile. What do you guys think?
You had to be friendly. Or at least look friendly.
I think you're right. I think the worst thing you can look is bored, because nobody wants to stop on the drive and enter a stranger into their car and be bored with that stranger. So you've got to...
Scary.
Yeah, you've got to present yourself as entertaining, a good time, reasonable, responsible, and not a scary person. I think that that's key. And the other thing, too, is that you never can outnumber the driver. If there's two hitchhikers, you got to hide one of them. And then once they stop to get the ride, the other one comes out. No driver is going to stop to get two people. It just feels like there's a little scary situation there. You have to present it as, is it okay if he comes along, we're together, and, you certainly don't want to ambush. But you have to be a little bit sneaky on the 1-2 punch with that.
Jerome, what's your thoughts?
One time I got picked up. I was with two other hitchhikers, and I had a dog. And this guy, we were hitchhiking at night, and this guy picked us up, and he was all by himself. But I guess he just wanted somebody to talk to. He was falling asleep, and he was in a pickup truck. And so two of us sat up front, and the other one sat in the back with the dog. But I guess that was a rare situation, because we really outnumbered the driver in that case, and we all were out on the road at the time that we got picked up.
I'll bet the dog helped.
Yeah, the dog helped, is right. But I have a comment on, your appearance is really important, too, when you're out on the road. And I always learned that if you have gear, and display your gear, like your backpack and so on, and, of course, a sign, that people tend to pick you up more than if you have no gear, because they realize, well, this guy or this girl is really traveling,
right.
Kind of carrying their world on their shoulders, and I'm sure that it'd be interesting to talk to that person and find out where they're from and, where they're going. I can't think of any ride where the person that picked me up didn't talk. There was always conversation going.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that, because
for
some reason they always talked.
Interestingly, we say it's a dying breed, but just 2 weeks ago, I picked up a hitchhiker. I haven't seen a hitchhiker in a dog's age. And I was in my own town here, so I felt a little, safe. It's a fairly insulated, small, rural town here in Connecticut. And there was a woman hitchhiking, and she had a horse saddle with her on the side of the road. So the point of your say, I said immediately, there's a story here, But I will say, in today's era, you have to be mindful. I was a man alone picking up a woman. I was nervous. I had my son and his teenage friend in the car. I was taking them to a sports practice. So I felt like I kind of wanted to pass this on a little bit and show them kind of a little bit of something that I used to do. So I picked the woman up, put her gear in the trunk, and I drove her. She was a groom for a horse barn that was not too far in the next town over, and we drove her to the horse barn and had a great time with her, and she was most appreciative, and she was clean cut, and she was a good soul. It was just her car was laid up, and she needed to get to work.
One of you mentioned a little bit earlier that, you've got to have the look. Jerome, you said, having stuff with you is a good idea. I know several thumb flaggers whose favorite deal was having a guitar case with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that was a guaranteed ride.
Yeah, and see, I hitchhiked with a guitar and a dog, and so my dog was, part husky, and so, when you first see her, it's like, oh, that's a beautiful dog, so people would pick me up just because of the dog. and they would talk about my dog and on and on and on. So that's another thing besides, you know, a guitar case, is if you have, you know, a beautiful looking dog. I mean, yeah.
I used to, growing up near the beach, surfboard was what worked for me. I'd stand out by the road with a surfboard, and they would say, "Hey, this is a guy looking for a good time. I'm just going to help him out and have a day at the beach."
That's a good one.
Sometimes I wouldn't even surf.
Yeah.
Actually, my gig was to dress as a hippie. Well, I was one. You know, long hair. You know, the Indian-styled shirt, bell-bottoms that came from hell. And people would just go, "Oh, we got to talk to this guy."
I also felt signs. I used to use signs as a way to kind of engage with the driver and use humor. Like, I, you know, so things like, "We'll ride for free." You know, we're talking about stating the blinding obvious, but that just would make them chuckle and say, "This guy's got a sense of humor. I'm going to, you know, this will be a good time to pick him up." Things like that would break through and have some humor, I thought, always worked.
Yeah, I usually traveled alone. I'm not sure it was the best aspect, or the best method, but it was the most successful because you're not outnumbering the person that's driving the car. But I can think of a couple of occasions where, you know, that there were two of us traveling together, and I had this great idea. You know, most of my hitchhiking was to go from one music festival to another. And so I grabbed a piece of cardboard and somehow found a marker and wrote, you know, Chelmsford Music Festival. I thought, you know, that would be a real go-getter. And the person traveling with me said, "Oh, dump the music festival. No one will pick us up."
Boy, he was wrong, huh?
Well, you know, the other thing that seems to be a popular sign during those times was the hitchhiking sign, "Need a miracle." I mean, you're talking to a group of people that immediately you're accepted within their community when they see "Need a miracle." You know, one of the great lines from people going to Grateful Dead concerts back then, looking for a free ticket, and when you're looking for a free ride on the road and you say "Need a miracle," there's a group of people will go out of their way to find you and pick you up. It's probably another group that'll press the pedal on the metal and take off. But
Jen, did you guys, gals, rather, use a sign?
We did to Houston. We just put, we were just simple. We just put Houston on there and held it up. I mean, you know, how much plainer can you get? We want to go to Houston. But from Houston to Dallas, no, we didn't. We didn't even use anything. We just said that's where we wanted to go when they'd stop and pick us up. So that's just the way we went.
Dan and Jerome, were you hippies?
Was I? No, I had the heart of a hippie, but I don't think I was a hippie. But this was definitely something that I got into.
How about you, Jerome? Were you a hippie?
Well, yeah, I tried to to take, you know, some of the doctrine with me, you know, and the look as well, and I was kind of proud of it, really.
I always think of Cheech and Chong on the road. Yeah, with their backpack, with their packs and stuff. That's what I always used to think of when you say hitchhiking.
Yeah.
But
there's something, you know, that I noticed too in my travels. We mentioned that, you know, like every ride is different, and his adventure. In my experience, I had a couple, or more than a couple, but I did find some similarities in some of the rides. Like, for example, I seem to get picked up by people that like to push the speed limit. And I never understood that, but it would scare the, it would really scare you. Because I got picked up one time. In fact, my buddy and I, we were hitchhiking in, somewhere around in San Bernardino, and we got picked up by this guy who had a sports car, you know, a real fast-looking car, you know, and it was a convertible, and I remember it was yellow, and he just drove like a nut, weaving in and out of the traffic, and it just scared us to death.
Yeah, there was always that element of sometimes you didn't know who you were hitching up with until you got into the car, and maybe in the first 5 minutes it would be revealed. For the most part, it was fine. There was that uncomfortable situation a couple of times, though, where you're looking to come up with any excuse you can to get out of the car as soon as possible. And you've already told them, you know, I'm going 40 minutes down the road, and they know where you're going, and they've agreed to take you, and now you're looking for a reason to just hit the eject button and, you know, eject through the moonroof. That's a scary feeling. I had that one time when we got picked up in upstate New York, and a guy had, as we got into the car, the entire dashboard was covered with skulls, and in the back he had all this, you know, weaponry and all this crazy stuff that we didn't know whether it was for show or for real, but it was just a violent, dark, dangerous-looking environment, and the guy was half asleep. And took me and my friend, and we started coming up with excuses that we started on the fly talking about how we're changing plans and we need to go the other way. We wasn't good enough that we'll get off sooner. We started saying, hey, we need to go the opposite direction, so let us out now.
Yeah, you know, it's back then, too, it was kind of important to be aware of some things, like what Dan is mentioning there, you know. It's a good idea to look inside the car before you get in it. And sometimes I learned that you don't have to take a ride. You know, if a car stops for you, you don't have to get in. But when you're hitchhiking and you've spent like an hour on the side of the road, you'll take anything. But sometimes the ride can turn into, you know, kind of a hairy ride if you don't look. Like if there's beer cans and whiskey bottles in the back seat, that's not a good ride to get into.
We kind of worried about the truckers with the sleepers, you know, worried that maybe somebody would be hid in the back.
Oh, yeah.
A little worried about that. But we managed. We didn't get surprised by anybody.
Oh, okay. Let's go around the table here. Jerome, what was the worst ride you ever had?
The worst ride I ever had? The one that scared me the most?
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, I hitchhiked at night, and I don't know why I did that when I was young. I guess just to increase the adventure. but anyway, I was hitchhiking at night, and this pickup truck with a camper on it, camper shell, pulled over, and he opened the door, I opened the door, and he looked like a construction worker, you know. Had a ball cap on and a flannel shirt, you know, and Levi's. And I thought, well, this guy looks pretty good, pretty cool. And I told him where I was going, and he said, okay, but you got to put your dog in the back. So I put my dog and my guitar in the back of his cab, and I got in. And one habit that I learned when I was hitchhiking is I always tried to put my gear in between myself and the driver, just for precaution, I guess. So that's what I did. I had my gear in between, in the middle, and we're driving along, and it was quiet, you know, for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden, I felt his hand on my thigh. and I just started shaking. And he propositioned me to come home with him and so on and so forth. And he was a lot bigger than me. And I was just so shocked and stunned and scared, you know, I just started shaking. And I said, no, you need to let me out right here. And so he did. He was very polite. but still just the fact of, you know, where he grabbed me and propositioned me, needless to say, I lit up a lot of cigarettes and smoked them pretty quick because I was really shaken and nervous for quite a while after the ride, too. I really had to try and get a hold of myself because nothing like that has ever happened to me before.
Well, what about you, Dan?
I'm thinking that my worst was also maybe one of my best. I was in college and went away to, I was a part of the rugby team. We had a road trip to Oneonta, upstate New York. And while at the party, I called a girl that I used to date in high school, Kathy O'Grady, if she's listening. And I basically said, if she's up at Cortland, another 2.5 hours west, upstate New York. And I said, hey, if I come on over for the weekend, you know, can we hook up? Can you put me up? And I've got a buddy of mine who's interested. She's like, yeah, you and your buddy, come on. I've got a girl, that my roommate is free. We'll hang out the whole weekend. It'll be great. So we leave the party, and we get on the interstate, and like before, with the state trooper comes up, and he tells us, get off the highway, and we had to go through some country roads. Somehow, we got turned around, lost our direction. We got back onto the thruway, started hitchhiking, because we couldn't get any rides on the country roads at night, and we hitchhiked in the wrong direction. We got picked up, and we thought we'd had a three-hour drive. We kind of both nodded off, woke up 3 hours east instead of going 3 hours west. And we woke up in Albany, New York, which is about 5 hours east of where we were trying to go. So I immediately saw the city, the bright lights in the city of Albany. I said, pull over. We got out. We had nowhere to go. We said, well, there's Albany State. We went in and found the closest dorm. There was a keg party going on, and we found some people who put us up for the night and had a free keg party, and we stayed the weekend. But, man, can you talk about that? That's just, you know, the least of what you're expecting. It was scary because we did trust too much. We got a ride at night with one guy, and we both fell asleep, and he could have taken us anywhere. We could have been anywhere. We just, you know, lost the sense of responsibility and being aware.
Oh, indeed. Jen, what was your worst experience?
Basically the same as Jerome's, like, you know, putting your hand on the thighs and, well, in the trucks. Nothing ever happened bad in the car. I mean, I can't remember anything whatsoever that went out of the way or wrong in a car. But in the truck, with both of us, we'd have to sit together on the front seat, which would push one of us closer to the driver. And the one time that the guy didn't want to take no for an answer, and we kept asking him to stop, pull over, I mean, to let us get out. And it took us a while to finally get him to do it, but, you know, we weren't harmed or anything, but it was kind of scary.
Well, I'll share my worst experience, which in retrospect is actually quite amusing. I lived in a small village. I think that there was something like 100 people that called it home, and the village itself was a single street, and at the top was the main road. It was something like 3 miles to the nearest town. Now, I actually grew up in the village pub. My parents owned it, and it was cake to get a ride. All right, all I had to do was step outside, stick my thumb out, and no one would drive past me because everyone knew my dad. Everyone knew me. Anyway, one day, your car stops. It was a two-door, so I'm in the back seat, and it happened to be the two gay guys in the entire area. I mean, gay wasn't that popular back then, and one of them says to me, "How about coming back to our place?" I, oh no, I'd much rather go to Wantage, which was the name of the town. I think I was about 14 at the time. I know they were joking, but it just gives you a pause for thought. Okay. What's the most interesting ride that you've ever had? I'm going to start with you, Jerome.
Well, off the top of my head, the most interesting was I got picked up somewhere in Kansas, I think, West Kansas. And then the people that picked me up, there was two guys that picked me up. They saw another hitchhiker, and they stopped for him. And he was interesting looking because he had a Stetson cowboy hat on. He had a leather suitcase, one of those old kinds that, you know, where you have, like, the belt that goes around each end. And he had, like, blue jeans on and cowboy boots. I mean, he didn't look like a hippie at all. He was a cowboy. And so they stopped and picked him up, and he got in the back seat with me, and he was very interesting. What he was doing was that every season, he lived in Winnipeg, in Ontario, I think.
Winnipeg is its own spot.
Yeah, okay. Well, in one of those provinces, he lived on some ranch, and he would go down every rodeo season when they had the big rodeo in Dallas, and he would hitchhike down there, and he was in the rodeo. And at that time, he was going home. And he was a very interesting ride, or not a ride, but I mean a very interesting person that I met on the road. And he had his own style of hitchhiking, you know, totally different than the hippie kind, you know, because he was a cowboy. And when we got out, you know, the ride was over, we both would hitchhike together. And that was what was really interesting, because here I was with long hair and, you know, kind of tattered clothes, a guitar, and a dog, and then there he was with his big cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and his leather suitcase. So I guess we really looked like the odd couple, but we didn't have any trouble getting rides.
How about you, Dan? What's your favorite story?
I think that it goes to the life on the road is, you know, hitchhiking is a metaphor for the adventure of the road, right? I was hitchhiking again, upstate New York. I was in college, and I was looking to go home to my sister's house for the weekend to, you know, do laundry and get some fresh meals in me and just kind of rest from the college experience. And I got picked up from three guys that were and a girl that were in the car, and they said they'd be glad to take me just within, like, 20 minutes of my destination. But then they were driving another 3 hours north because they were going to Saranac, New York, for a bartender's convention. They were all bartenders. And they started telling me about what the weekend entailed and how they all, you know, it's free drinking for the weekend. All the bars are catering to all the bartenders, a special pass, and, you know, they've got these passes. And I ended up deciding to change my plans, and I didn't need to go home after all and see my sister and spent the weekend in Saranac, New York with the bartenders convention. I had the time of my life. Dropped me off. They dropped me off 3 days later at the same place they picked me up. That's a ride more than a ride.
That is absolutely priceless. Okay. Thumb flagging is very much a lost art these days. I know. You know, we mentioned this earlier in the program. Is it better to travel alone as a pair? In my opinion, alone's best. If there's three of you, you've got zero chance. I'd love to know your thoughts. Jerome.
And you're referring to, like, today, if you'd go out and hitchhike today?
Well, back in the day, back in the day, or even today?
Well, I guess it's kind of, it depends too on where you're going and what part of the country you're hitchhiking in. But as far as my opinion, see, I hitchhiked with a buddy, and we went all over the Southwest. We didn't have hardly any trouble for people picking us up. Many times we outnumbered the driver. But also when I was hitchhiking alone, it seemed like I moved faster. You know, I got a lot more rides. But today, in today's society, I think it would be best if you paired up and had somebody, you know, to be with you and so on.
Dan, what's your comments?
Yeah, I think the first winning strategy is solo. But behind that, actually, one that I think I've had a lot of success with is when you're hitchhiking with a girl. When you are a couple, you appeal to a broad set. You know, there's women might even think about picking you up in that situation.
Yeah.
I know families have. Guys will pick you up because you're a guy and there's a girl, and that's an interesting exchange where there's going to be, you know, you can talk to both you and the girl and feel like you've met someone along the way. I think that when you're a couple, you really increase your odds of hitchhiking. But that's not to say that that's ideal, because you've got some bickering going on for the hour or two between rides. He often got worn out with the experience a lot sooner than I did, and when I was solo, I had a whistle in my step and not a care in the world.
Well, okay. Dan, what's the most interesting person you've met on the road?
Ooh. Maybe that Confederate general in that army camp. I don't know. That was interesting for sure. You know, I guess not one stands out. I just remember it was a certain type of person that normally was the one to pick you up, and they were just somebody that wanted to share their stories. You know, it was really an exchange. I don't remember anyone that I, you know, had a profound change as a result of meeting, but I just always felt like I took a part of them with me. So I don't have any one that stands out.
How about you, Jerome? Is there one person?
Well, I agree with Dan. You know, it's just too many to narrow down. It's like saying what's your favorite movie or favorite book or favorite song or whatever. But, you know, they all were, you know, I could say it's this person or that person, but they all were interesting in their own right. And it just was fortunate that I had the experience of meeting people and learning about their lives and them learning about my life. And I have had people give me money, which is pretty interesting, but when I didn't ask for it. But all in all, you know, every ride just had its own interest in it and encounter.
I think I was about 14, maybe 15. I was very much into the music scene at the time, and I got picked up by the manager of a very, very well-known rock band, and it was only a 3-mile drive. I was just trying to get home, and you know, when we pulled into the parking lot, I said, "Why don't you come in? I'll buy you a beer." And you know, he gave me one of those looks like, you're underage. You know, how the hell are you going to buy me a beer? So I explained that my father owned the establishment, and in he came. What has changed over the years? You know, the 70s, and I have to admit that I'm finding this program very nostalgic. Why has thumb flagging fallen out of favor?
I'll start. I just think there's just so many changes in our society that to have people's guards up in a way that didn't exist back in the 70s. It's not, you know, everything everything has changed in terms of just having your guard up. And I think that in many ways it's not a wise decision anymore to either hitchhike or to pick up a hitchhiker, because it used to be, like we're saying, an adventure, something that was an experience. Now, you know, who's hitchhiking except for, you know, if someone's out there hitchhiking to go, you know, hiking and they've got their gear, that's one form. But if somebody's just really down and out and they're using hitchhiking as a means of transportation, that's kind of a scary proposition these days. I think it's just changed.
Jerome, would you concur with that observation?
Yeah, it has changed in a lot of different ways. What I can think of right at the moment is the lack of trust and the lack of value towards life. Where back in the 70s, you know, more people looked at things in a valuable way, a respectful way. You know, you didn't think about, well, how can I harm this person and, you know, do them in, you know, do a dirty deed to them. You thought, well, how can I help this person? You know, and what can I learn from this person? But nowadays, there's so much mistrust and paranoia and conspiracies out there, you know. And I think the technology of today, so much different than it was in the 70s for obvious reasons, but technology of today hasn't helped hitchhiking, the art of hitchhiking, because so many people are spooked, you know, about over one movie or over one story that the hitchhiker was taken somewhere and deep in the woods and decapitated or dismembered or something like that. So
yeah, or vice versa.
Yeah, vice versa is right. Yeah. So, you know, I think, personally, what I think is that there's a lot more people out there because of population, for obvious reasons. You know, there's more people nowadays than there was in the 70s. You know, and there's more people that are on the go. They're just, like, caught up in this fast lane, and they just don't have time or they don't trust anybody enough to pick them up.
And I think also the legal community has told us that we're wrong for doing it. I mean, back then, if something happened to you, you know, any situation that you said, either of you talked about the hand on the knee or any kind of improper action, then you just walked away saying, okay, I had a warning that was a close call, or I was wronged, or maybe someone took my money, but there was no pursuit of that. Now, as a driver, if you pick anyone up, especially if I was picking up that woman last week, 2 weeks ago, I had to really think about that. And the only reason I was willing to do it is because I felt like I had two reasonable witnesses in the car with me and that nothing could be, no accusations could be made at me that would be unfounded. It's just a different environment where, you know, in today, where in the workplace, if someone's made to feel uncomfortable, they have a suit. That type of adventure is gone, I think, in terms of that open trust in a hitchhiker situation.
Yeah, and another point, too, is that Dan was mentioning on this angle is it's some states now you just can't go through hitchhiking. You know, they never used to be that way, but now there's a lot of states that it's just illegal to hitchhike. And therefore, it's hard to get a good spot to start hitchhiking.
I'm going to change angles completely. You're going on a long journey. What stuff did you guys take with you?
Well, the first thing, of course, you need something warm to sleep in, a sleeping bag, and, you know, maybe an extra pair of shoes, a pair of socks, you know, underwear, things like that. I always took with me like a notebook, and that would help pass the time, and take a couple books to read, you know, while you're waiting for a ride or whatever, and log your journey. And, you know, the basics. The lighter the load, the better. But you want to take the basics with you.
Yeah. In fact, my theory was I somehow managed to acquire two ex-army capes. You know, they were very waterproof, and better still, that they could be buttoned together to make a tent. I had a sleeping bag, I had a map, and because my parents owned a pub, I'd usually borrow a couple of bottles of beer. Yeah, and yeah, we're talking age 14, 15. Dan, I'm not sure if it was Dan or Jerome that answered the first question. Whoever didn't, leap in.
Yeah, that was Jerome. So I would say same as what you both described. I would do a tent and a sleeping bag, change of clothes, socks, a flashlight is something I would add to what, you know, I always brought a flashlight because you know, those long dark nights, you know, you never know where you'd be. And boy, if I could have, in today's technology, man, would I have given anything to have had a phone. A cell phone would have been so cute. Because back then, you were really stuck. You were out there. If you were out on a spot and you were, you know, on a highway and there was nothing close by, you had no means of communication. You had no bailout exit strategy. You had nothing. You just had to, you had to walk, wait, or hope for good luck.
Yeah, you're totally vulnerable. You know, and that's with me. That's some of the fear set in when I felt like that. You know, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, it's starting to get dark, and no rides are coming, none, and you're out there all alone. You know, so yeah, a cell phone would have been nice back then.
my experiences, and you know, they were in England. I did rack up thousands of miles of travel. I would head off to some music festival, and rarely did I have anything other than the price of the ticket in my pocket. Yet I never went hungry or thirsty. You know, the Hare Krishnas or the, you know, reborn or born-again Christians always seem to be offering something. In fact, I actually quite like lentil stew, you know, even today. Is that how you guys approach that? Jerome.
Go ahead, Dan. No. Oh, all right. Well, as far as people giving me food or helping out that way, I can't remember. I think somebody, you know, like I said, they gave me some money, but I can't quite remember any specific ride that really gave me food.
What was your destination? You know, was it literally point A to point B, or you know, to make it to some music festival or something like that?
No, I always had a place to go. It just made me feel a little bit more secure and confident that, you know, I'm not just out here wandering around aimlessly. You know, I have a destination.
How about you, Dan? Did you set off with a sack full of cash?
Not a sack full of cash, but I always had a little, you know, like I always basically said, I don't know when or where I'm going to end up, when it really is part of it. Like, you know, I'm planning on being there in 5 hours, and it could take 10, you know, 12. So I might have to, you know, put myself up somewhere, or I don't know. So I used to bring some extra money. And I would make sure that I would not carry that in my wallet. I was always sensitive to the fact if I had some cash or extra cash on me that it could be taken in that situation. So I'd hide it in my sock. And I would always be self-sustained in terms of my food, where I would always, my thing was to bring a sleeve of Ritz crackers with a jar of peanut butter. and oftentimes I found I was feeding the driver. I was making up some peanut butter on the crackers and feeding the driver.
Okay, I've got a whacked out idea for you two folks. Why don't we start, you know, thumbflagging.org. Let's bring back the honorable mode of transport.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, today is National Bike to Work Day, and it occurred to me as we were setting this up that there would be some event like that where, you know, one day where we get out and hitchhike, and maybe just locally for, you know, like in town would be the way to start it off, you know, just giving people feeling trusted and comfortable with the idea again.
I'm going to vote Jerome as honorary chairman. Well,
yeah.
He started the nonsense with his book, Thumb Flagging. Jerome, where can people get copies of this wonderful book?
Oh, well, first of all, they're available at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and quite a number of other sites, as well as the publisher's website. Do you want me to give you that site now?
Oh, sure.
Okay. It's a www.strategicpublishinggroup.com/title/thumbflagging.
Alrighty. I'll make sure I mention it in the wrap-up. You also have a second book out, The Haunting.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the book you're referring to is The Haunting of Andrew Sharpay. And Andrew is he's a middle-aged cook who just wanders around the Southwest looking for love, you know, looking for true love. And in his quest, he finds rejection and haunting memories that only spark him to go on, to spur on. Along his way in Las Vegas, he meets this dancer. She's a famous show dancer. Her name is Lorraine Dufont, and she's this beautiful African-American woman that Andrew meets in one of these nightclubs. Well, it was love at first sight, and they both fall in love. And they go on their way and live together, and not only is Lorraine famous, but of course she's rich, and she's very popular in Las Vegas. Everybody knows her, and she knows everybody. But a twist of fate ends their relationship and just devastates Andrew. And he starts drinking heavily, and he just couldn't handle living in Vegas anymore, so he starts his wandering again. And he ends up in this eastern Idaho town, Pocatello, Idaho. And in this town is where he hunkers down and gets another cook job. He goes from being assistant chef at a casino to working at Denny's. And he meets this enchanting woman named Iris, who will change his life basically forever. But what Andrew doesn't realize is that Iris is a witch, and her ex-husband, Devin, is a satanic witch who places a curse on Iris. And Andrew just falls into this spell and this trap. And I'm going to end it there, and I don't want to give away too much more, but that's what happens to Andrew. If you want more, learn more, you're going to have to read the book.
Yep, I can honestly say that the book is well worth reading. Dan, do you have any books or videos?
No, I'm right here. No, I'm sorry to say, nothing as interesting as all that, but I'm more of the traditional Irish bard. I keep the storytelling alive. I don't have anything put down.
What do you do these days when you're not thumb flagging?
I head up a marketing agency, so I come up with creative campaigns for brands to connect with consumers and do a whole bunch of digital campaigns and advertising and marketing campaigns for brands. All with the ideas of how the brands are going to connect with consumers.
That's wonderful. I'll tell you what, we're just about out of time. I do want to thank the pair of you for joining me today. This has been just a wonderful trip down memory lane. My wife had to scoot, no doubt, to make dinner or something like that.
I don't know. She may be heading to Houston right now in a truck, Simon. You don't know.
I'm looking out.
Check up on that.
I'm looking out the window. I do believe that she stood on the edge of the road with her thumb out.
I think you need to share a bottle of wine and see what other stories come out in her past.
Yeah, there you go.
But I honestly do want to thank the pair of you for taking time to talk with me. This has been just a magnificent show. I don't know what to say.
Well, it's been very fun, and I agree, Simon. It's just been great, and I'm glad, Dan, that I had the chance to meet you and share with your stories and my stories. I just think it was a really great idea you had, Simon. I really do. Thank you for making
it
me a
great
part
walk,
of it.
A great walk down memory, some of them that I had forgotten. I'm glad you were able to bring them back to the surface.
I'm pretty certain that we're going to be revisiting this subject in some form. So, Dan, I do hope that you'll keep in touch with me.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, guys. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Okay, Dan. Thank you. Bye.
This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a wonderful day, and let's get together again soon. Goodbye.